Oh, hey there, listeners and juicers. Before we get into today's episode, I wanted to let you know that if you have fallen in love with the Draw Your Dice podcast and want to help put some new fruit on the table, but don't feel comfortable making a monthly commitment, well, you can support the show via the Acast supporter feature. No gift too large, nor too small. Just click on the link in the show description and know that I am sending you the strongest hug when you do so.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f***?
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
I don't think seeking permission is the first thing you should do. I think that creation is the first goal.
My name is Jeremy Gage, and welcome to the Draw Your Dice podcast. This is an educational show involving all things tabletop role-playing industry. Listen alongside me as we hear from creators, entrepreneurs, and supporters about their personal best practices, principles, and philosophies. I encourage anyone from the budding game designer to a seasoned publisher and everyone in between to sit down with us and enjoy today's episode. Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Draw Your Dice podcast. My name is Jeremy Gage, as you heard in the intro, but as always, the show is never about me. It is about a beautiful guest that I have for you here today. You may know them, and it's going to be a good time. The face, the voice, the personality behind Collabs Without Permissions, editor with Moonrat Conspiracy, has a little secret game in the works. I'd like to welcome to the show. Bye. Huntsman!
Here I am! Hello!
Hello!
Hello, bye.
Hello, Jeremy, and all of your wonderful viewers. Hello.
Hello.
It is so nice to be here today. I loved the audience cheering.
Yes, for all 200 people that are fitting in my office right now.
Oh, they're all waving. Hello.
Hello. Bye. As we always begin the show, would you just give a brief introduction of who you are, just in case people don't know you and are under a rock or something like that? And also any plugs or anything like that where they can get in touch with you, any way to like get to your services and things like that?
Hello, hello, hello. I am Vi Huntsman. I am editor, YouTuber, video essayist extraordinaire. If you want to see a little sci-fi short film review I made of Mothership, you should just Google Mothership review on YouTube and look up my channel Collabs Without Permission. If you want to listen to me tweet infrequently and support boost other creators, you should look me up on Twitter at I'm a Waffle Bunny, and you can DM me there, or you can find me on Discord in the Exalted Funeral server, or just like wherever. I'm on the Brain Trust Discord, although I mostly lurk. Just like DM me, just like say hi and be like, Vi, I heard you're an editor. I can edit your game. That's me.
Hell yeah. Hell yeah. Additionally, Vi, as the second piece of this icebreaker for the listeners, would you also walk us through how you got into the tabletop space, how you started playing games or how you were exposed to them, and then what sort of made you decide that I want to support these authors through my abilities, or did you try in game design? Like, walk us through that.
So, a young babe of I don't remember how old I was. I was thinking to myself one day, "There's this." Wait, we might edit this out.
No, you're okay.
So there's this interesting anecdote in Mormonism that says that if you reach the highest tier of the celestial kingdom and get a high score, you can make your own worlds. And I was like, oh, that sounds really cool, but I want to do that now. And so I was like, there's got to be something for this, right? And I found I'd like to be a goody two shoes and just have a nice clean hands and say that I just like found fifth edition, but what I really found was the Trove, and I pirated a lot of tabletop games.
A small moment of silence for the Trove.
Okay, is any of that usable? Should I go back and not mention?
No, that's great. No, it showcases who you are. You wanted to say it, so let's go.
Not practicing at the moment. Or in sure. the future. But you know what? That's how it started. That's the truest. This is the truest account. I don't think I've ever mentioned that before, but that is really where it started, where I was like, you know, I don't know if I'm really bought into this whole thing, but the idea sounds cool. And I was like, one of the first games I played was 5th edition, D&D 5th edition. I played a little bit of Fiasco, or I ran everything, because, you know, I was the one that was like, hey, do you want to come play pretend at my house? And everyone was like, I guess. But yeah, it was D&D 5e, it was Fiasco. I tried my hardest to make it to what I wanted it to be. And but eventually I found people in other corners of other scenes doing much cooler things that I was much more interested in. One of those people that I found online, there was a person by the name of Matt Kelly, who was selling some books, and I bought one of them, and we kind of got in touch a little bit, and I figured out that he was starting a web store called Exalted Funeral, and it was right in the very, very early beginnings of it, and yeah, he just was, like, reselling some books by, like, ordering them in bigger quantities and selling them on a web store, and one of those books was called Disciples of Bone and Shadow by Black Oath Entertainment. It was a single-player game, kind of dungeon crawl, hex exploration on a dying world, you know, kind of really cool stuff. And I was reading it, and I played around with it. I played it completely wrong. They were like, I haven't told Alex this yet, but I got on his Discord server once, and I was like, hey, I bought a horse. And everyone was like, whoa, you survived a long time to buy a horse. What really happened is there's this trait. Okay, sorry, side tangent. There's this trait that you can get in the game that says, like, it gives you, like, +1 damage for each hit that you land on, like, a certain type of creature or whatever. And I bought it, like, 5 times. You're only supposed to be able to buy it once. But so I was just like wrecking shop, and it was great. Not the intended experience, but you know what? We'll call it my first experience hacking a game. Well, that's what we'll call it. And but anyway, I found this is another deep truth in me. But I'm a little annoying little nasty little freak. And I noticed, like, a couple of spelling errors here and there, or, like, a couple of grammatical errors, and I was like, you know what? I've done this several times in my life. There was one time where I was doing a packet for a extra credit in high school, and it was an English packet, and I took a red pen to the whole thing and, like, got where they got, like, page numbers wrong and like, grammar wrong and punctuation wrong, and I made, like, a table of, like, errors on the inside front cover and sent it back. They never emailed me back, unfortunately. They didn't want to hire me as their editor. But you know what?
How old were you when you did that?
That was my senior year of high school, so...
Wow. However,
yeah. Yeah, I'm just annoying. Luckily, though, when I emailed Alex, I was like, hey, just... I found some spelling errors. Would it be okay if I, like, sent them over? And he was like, yeah, sure. Like, that's cool. And I'm like, okay, here are a bunch from the entire book. And I took notes, and here's the page numbers and how I would rewrite a couple sentences, but mostly just some errors. And he was like, the whole book? And I was like, yeah. And he's like, this is valuable work. You should be getting paid for this. And I was like, really? And so it was great. He was like, yeah, we're doing a reprint. We sold out, like, the hardcover run. It was cool. It's like the first book that Exalted Funeral independently produced, as opposed to just, like, reselling stuff or facilitating creators getting their books to. And so he's like, yeah, we're doing, like, a softcover reprint. Do you want to edit it? And I was like, yes. And so I did. And that was my first editing job. That's how I got into it, by being just a perfectionist.
Yes. I love it. That's such what a I think it's so amazing that, like, and this is the reason why I think this is very cool, is because I watch a lot of, like, entrepreneurial YouTube channels and stuff like that, and a lot of them talk about how you have to kind of do the free stuff in the beginning to really set yourself up as a expert in your field, or to have case study for people to hire you for those sorts of creative works.
Yeah.
And so I find it so fascinating that it was already, like, an intrinsic, I will use the word passion. I don't know if that is the word you would use for this, but sort of an intrinsic passion for making sure that the language is as clear as possible for the person that it is being translated to. In a couple of previous episodes that haven't come out yet on Draw Your Dice, I had a conversation with Amber Seeger, aka at Rocket Orca on Twitter, who does a lot of, like, UX design stuff. And we talked about a conceptualization that people are computers, we are the hardware, and we all have different hardwares, and then games are software. And if a game isn't written well, code-wise, right, it's not going to transfer well into our computer, it's going to have glitches and bugs, memory loss, things like that. So I think that I'm on the side of the spectrum. It's like the language, the verbiage, the vocabulary that you use and the way you translate it to an individual matters. It can matter a lot because you want to make it as simple as possible, not only for the expert consumer of tabletops, the person that has, like, 100 books on a single shelf, and the person who has zero books but wants to start playing with their friends, maybe is being the considerate individual to run a game. Run games for your GMs, please. We want to play.
We do, please.
Please. Oh, and we don't always want to resort to solo or co-op games. We want a GM. At least that. But I think that's amazing. I think that's amazing that you took on that initiative to do that for your friend Matt. And just a really, really cool experience. Additionally, I also want to add, how did you start doing the YouTube channel? Like, why did you start doing collabs without permissions?
It's honestly embarrassing the number of times that I've rewatched my own videos, because the YouTube channel is not for you out there. It's not. It's for me.
It's like your own personal journal that you just have on the internet.
That's right. No. In reality, what happened was I think that it is a super common gateway into, like, consuming more YouTube content to say that, you know, I think I'll be the millionth person to say that I was really inspired by every frame a painting on YouTube, talking about film stuff and the many imitators and rather people who are the imitators and the iterators and all the people that made lots of video essay content. And I really loved a lot of that. Like, I spent a lot of time watching a lot of those videos. I can't deny it. And I kind of got really passionate about RPGs, and my roommate, Anna, who now runs a very cool podcast, a narrative podcast called Find Us Alive, you should watch that, was starting to do YouTube as well. And I was like, hey, could I make a video or two with your camera, Anna? And she was like, yes, do it. Be a dirty YouTuber with me.
Filthy YouTube.
It's true. And so I was like, okay, what's going on here? There's Questing Beast, who was a huge contributor to me getting into, like, becoming aware of mostly kind of OSR trad kind of products. And I didn't know a lot of other names. And there was a light bulb that went on in my brain where I was like, there are not video essayists about tabletop games. I think that Questing Beast very solidly fills a very specific niche. And I was like, I was looking at all the other blank space and, like, the whole possibility space of what we could be doing on YouTube with tabletop games. And so I was like, you know, I'm gonna make a Questing Beast video just for fun. And so I did. And then I was like, and now I'm going to try something else. So my first video was kind of a top-down flip-through. It was kind of, I was very deliberately imitating the way that he spoke and the way that he moved his hands and the way that he presents his videos. And it was really funny. And I did that because I wanted his attention. I can't. I mean, that's obvious. And also because I decided to name my channel Collabs Without Permission, because one of the many reasons it's called that is because I was totally making just like a pastiche of his style. And that was really appealing to me. I was like, you know, I really want to do that. And so with my second video, I made a pastiche of like Dale Kingsmill and this one thing called Explanation Point. I did like two Brian David Gilbert segments from like Polygon's Unraveled. I did just some stuff on a snowy mountain because I wanted to. And I was just like, and it was so fun. It was so fun. And so I've just kind of made that like my thing, because I've always really enjoyed like just writing. And I'm pretty, I mean, like as an editor, like it's not the best, to kind of jump conversations, I think it's important to have an editor. And this is kind of a self pride thing where I have to like, you know, dig myself into the dirt a little bit, where I'm like, when I write something, I will have to hire an editor. Like, I can't be my own editor.
Yeah.
On the other hand, when I write something, it's quite concise. I feel like I'm pretty good at relaying my ideas. And so when writing YouTube scripts, I was like, this is scratching that itch. Because when you leave schooling, you don't really have to write essays anymore usually. But I was like, mm-hmm. This is kind of scratching that creative writing itch, where I can talk about games and I can think about ways to present them in a thematic way that brings the viewer into the world of the book or game you're talking about. And it's just been so much fun. I don't know. I mean, like, yeah, it's because it's fun. It's because I felt like it was needed. And it seems to be doing pretty okay. Mm-hmm. Sometimes people talk about me and I don't realize it. And I'm like, man, when I'm listed among, you know, like next to Questing Beast, you know, as like the one of the people that got me started, I think it's kind of humbling, where I'm like, you know, mm-hmm. I've been listening to, there was this one, I think it was probably on Reddit. Someone was like, any favorite tabletop YouTubers? I've been listening to like Questing Beast and Collapse Without Permission. And I'm like,
oh,
okay. Like I'm on the list. That's cool.
I'm in the club. You know what I mean? I can uh-huh. get in. That's, God. I just love it, especially from a fellow content creators sort of space. You know, I feel the same way as you when someone's like, yeah, I've been listening to Plus One XP and Draw Your Dice and all these other shows that are out there on the podcast space. And it truly, like, to get a recommendation from a person who I've never made Twitter contact with is, I don't know, almost a little tearing sometimes when it happens, like, enough times. Like, oh, shoot. Cool, great. And it's just beautiful. And you do great work. You're really thorough in, especially for the videos I watched. Especially, I don't know if you remember this, but I'm Roll to Forge on YouTube, at least on my like goof account. And I was on your Look Through Invisible Sun when you're drinking wine. So that's my first video touch point for you, from me to you.
That was a fun one. That was yep. Anyway, sorry. Yeah. I want to talk to you.
No, it was good. It was good. But you've been just to add more to your own personal ego, you've been recommended several times by different people to get you here on the show. So I'm happy that we can be here today. And you're obviously making an impact in the industry overall and helping people. To what degree is to them, but for me, I feel like we share a lot of a similar energy when it comes to how we communicate our personalities in content form. I think we're both mildly casual. We don't like over set up, or like, I just watched the one you did of Arc Doom where you're just walking in the woods, yeah, hanging out with your cameraman, and the other one where you announced the July book club, which I would love for you to sort of talk about as well, just to create more awareness for it. Just hanging out in the backyard, which is great. You know what I mean? Just on your phone, just, hey, can you hear me? Great. Perfect. All right. So it's good. I love your energy.
I think that it's partially, I did a 1,000 subscriber live stream to celebrate mm-hmm. the other day, because I hit that milestone, which was very exciting. I try not to hugely anticipate numerical milestones, but that was a mm-hmm. fun one to celebrate mm-hmm. after it came, you know. And in that live stream, I think someone hit it on the head where they were like, you know, I think that my stuff is not the most polished, but it's earnest. And I think that's a space that I am so happy to occupy for the entirety of my time here, right? I don't want to look like a professional production facility. I don't, you know, I don't need a lot of that. And I think that there's a very specific, I was going to just go into talking about the cynicism in corporate video making and the false like camaraderie, like the producer behind the camera and all that stuff. But I'm more happy to just like, you can tell it's a one person show and that's the way I kind of like it right now.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. I don't know if I would ever just to do more interviews, maybe someone could edit my audio for me. But other than that, like, I don't see myself scaling out of what I'm doing right now and in addition to other work. So kindred spirits is really what I'm trying to sell to you here. If you feel similarly, great. If not, also fine.
I think that I consume like a lot of tabletop media, and I think it's fun seeing those touch points. I feel the kindred spiritness across the web, Jeremy.
Touching one day. Yeah, so you know, the journey for YouTube has been great. Let's sort of get into more of the what you do content wise in the industry and editing and everything like that. So, you know, this is still a little new for me, so I hope these questions are guiding for any of the listeners that are thinking about different ways they can contribute or make or help or make money doing different skills. So recently for me, I did just as an example of showcasing this sort of stuff, I recently talked about how I don't feel like I'm a systems designer in a lot of ways. I think a lot of people, when they first start making games, they feel like they have to systems hack or something like that, or make their own dice pool, whatever, or use cards. And that's just not how my brain works. I usually start with good ideas, but I'm really bad at iteration. Like, I'm absolutely terrible at it. And I get kind of like sullen about like, man, this does not feel like a good idea. And then I kick it to the curb. I've been trying to like systems design for like the last 6 months. But recently I started taking on some projects where I was doing content design. This is stealing from like video game industry terminology, but basically I make my setting stuff, NPCs, a GM toolkit things, like just stuff that just feeds off of the system. Mm-hmm. And I write lore. I'm writing lore bits and stuff for different games. And so that's been really eye-opening to me. And I've had people respond to that like, oh, I guess I'm sort of like a systems designer because I hate writing content. I despise it. And that's been really eye-opening. So the reason why I start in that way is that Vi, first of all, being an editor, what kind of can you show us like what a day in the life of an editor sort of goes with when you're in the work, and then we can sort of after that talk about like what can game authors or designers do to give a best practices of how to approach you for work, right?
Day
in the life.
I wake up at 2 p.m. and I get a... No.
That classic entrepreneur. I wake up at 4:30 every morning and I do meditative yoga while coffee is siphoned into me via needle.
Just, no, antithesis. I think that... So the workflow for me as an editor is that the... And this is something that the people who you're talking about, who are systems writers or content writers, are going to be acutely aware of, which is that if we want to take a second to dip into like the realities of writing for tabletop, is that when you are a writer for tabletop stuff, unless you are like one person in a company or like you are a freelance hired writer for a company, you are not going to be just the writer. You're going to be the writer, the project manager, the person managing the editors and the proofreaders, the person doing like commissioning art, and the person running the Kickstarter and managing budgets and bank stuff. It's a huge load of work. You're not just a writer. Let's bill ourselves correctly for all of the important work that we do for ourselves and for others. And so by necessity, then the writer approaches me, or I approach them with like, you know, I noticed you are making a thing and I would like to help do the refining process. Or they say, hey, Vi, I heard about this moon rat thing. And I'm like, mwahaha. just laugh ominously from the shadow. It doesn't communicate well over email, but I you know, type it out in asterisks and all that. So professional. And so it's usually in Google Docs If it's a very long manuscript, split it up by chapter. But I get the manuscript and I figure out what it needs. Most of the time, the author has something in mind, but there are a couple different things that we can do for a manuscript. If it's in like a quite finished state, maybe if another copy editor has gone over it already, we can just jump straight to proofreading, which is the lightest touch. And I'm going to be stealing directly from Will Yobst here. Will, I see you. On Twitter, something they said was just like, it really like just very clarified my own job for me, which was that proofreading is for checking individual words, right? So there might be just like things you've misspelled, or you put an apostrophe in the wrong place, or, you know, you use the wrong word in an idiom. I check for that sort of thing. That's proofreading. If it's the first time an editor has gotten their teeth into a document, then usually what you need is copy editing. So The way Will described it was that's like looking at individual sentences, and that's like how they flow into each other, you know, if it's too long or too short. I think that something that's important to me is although it can seem impressive sometimes, there have been jobs that I have... Oh, don't repeat this. Don't put this on your podcast, Jeremy.
Am I really? Yeah,
there have been sections of book where... And I preface this... thrice over, this is not a metric of the quality of editing, but I've cut like more than 50% from some sections of game where I'm like, you know, we're just gonna, that's some of that where it's like, oh, this has been repeated a couple times anyway. And then the last one is dev editing, which is like, hey, we're gonna look at the manuscript as a whole, we're gonna look at order of information, we're gonna try to make sure that it's being communicated in the very clearest way on a very like meta level, like the order the chapters are in, the order that like, or like how we present information, something. And this is not only for systems, but you were talking about writing adventures. One of my fellow comrades in editing was talking about how in a dev job they were doing for an adventure, what they were able to do was it ended up a lot longer because the editor was like, hey, this is all really great. I want you to make like these couple things, like you should keep writing in this area to like, because that would be like really useful tools for people that are running your adventure that you're writing. And yeah, so it's just like that's where the scope of editing just explodes and becomes, you know, individual words, individual sentences, and then everything.
The jump is insane.
Yeah, it's just like how about you write a lot more, or how about we just take this whole section out, or how about we rewrite the way that the everything is formatted? I don't know. It's just everything. And so, you know, a day in the life then would be I sit down, I check myself to be like, all right, am I copy editing, am I proofreading? I tune up those annoying, like you click on one and they're in your recommended for the rest of all time. Just like the exactly 1 hour long YouTube videos. Those are so good for me. Those are so good because I edit for exactly an hour. And then I'm like, you know what? I'm going to just pause and do something else and then come back with another 1 hour, just exactly 1 hour long YouTube video of just background music. Those are so great. That would be my top one stay at, like working at home tip is those 1 hour YouTube videos. And I just go to work. I just eat words. They sustain me.
It sounds like there's a lot of really cool benefits just outside. So what I'm hearing is that there is both a polishing energy, but also a sort of consulting / development energy as well in terms of being an editor. And I think that's a huge benefit because a lot of times when people talk about editing, it's just like, oh, you definitely need a second pair of eyes on this because your own personal eyes are gonna miss stuff. You're gonna say, you know, I when I write first drafts for stuff, I write them like I speak, and that doesn't always work for all of my projects. I have been told and have noticed. Yeah, it depends on the medium. And so getting a second pair of eyes on it are really important because it's hard to take yourself out of that. But also on the benefit of like the developmental front of having a second pair of eyes say, hey, I found this bit particularly confusing. And you're not writing, right? I think what is important here is that you're not writing anything.
That
you're
is
just saying,
important. Yeah.
Because you, I think on the same potential con of that development side or something to be wary of is that you're, what do I want to say? this is going to sound a little bougie, but you're not the artist, right? Like, you're not going to come in and say, like, oh, I totally think this D6 system should turn into a D8 system. Right. Or I think that instead of a necromancer at the end of this adventure, I think it'd be better if it was a dragon. Like, that's not what you're coming in here to do. You're just here to point out, like, hey, this was difficult for me to digest. Is there any ideas that you have that could deflate the growth here or deflate the excess that I don't feel it needs, or that it's too much or too little, right? I don't have enough explanation of, like, the genre that you're sitting in to deliver the idea of the necromancer. Like, we face zero zombies in this. How am I supposed to know that this is what I'm preparing for? Right. Maybe that's just an idea, but...
There's two aspects to that, one of which ties into how the you know, the writer of the adventure does far more than writing, which is that, you know, it's better as an editor to have a little bit of flexibility in what role you can play. So by having a couple tools in my tool belt, I am able to kind of be flexible to the needs of, you know, what might be like a two-person project. You know, sometimes it's literally just, you know, the author and I, or and also maybe an illustrator. Some, you know, a lot of people illustrate their own stuff. And so if they're able to fill a whole ton of roles and I'm able to do like 1 to 3, you know, then that is... That's makes it easier to manage the project. That's something I ran into with my YouTube channel too, which is that recently one of my good friends was like, hey, can I write a video for you to perform? Because I'm kind of camera shy, but I have like some fun ideas. And we've been just like hashing it out over a couple weeks. Because it's like, you know, it's not, I'm not at the scale where I can hire a writer for my YouTube channel, you know? It's just kind of the space that we inhabit. And the other half is that, you know, it is very much, you hit it right on the head, which is that it's very much not my role to write. Like, if I think that a sentence would be better if there were, if every single word in it was different, then, you know, or rather, like, the ideas in it were different, that's not the job that I'm here to do. Part of my style, like, part of the brief that I send to writers is that part of my editing style is, like, if I can tell you searched really hard for just the right word, then I work really hard to keep that word in there, because I can tell that's part of what you're trying to communicate. And so it's, you know, I'm not going to come in and rewrite your thing, but it's very much, and that's part of what makes editing a little bit invisible, is that I'm here to just, like, trim off the very top of what you're doing and make it look as pretty as it can be.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's interesting that you mentioned that someone is trying to approach you for, like, to execute their idea for them. Because just yesterday, per the recording of this, I was talking about how I want to do some sort of tabletop RPG design agency, essentially. And be like, hey, pitch us a game idea you have. And, you know, on crew, I have a systems designer, a content designer. I have an editor. If we want to do an actual play of it, I have a video editor I can call and a sound editor, stuff, something like that. And so I was also thinking about, like, there are just people who don't want to, like, put in the time, but they want to see this thing come to fruition. What if there's just, like, a mercenaries designer guild that's like, hey, I have a really cool idea for a trad game. Cool. What do you want in it? Because we'll figure it out. And, you know, I think it's, like, the scientist. And I don't know. If you're out there and you think that's a cool idea and, you know, let's fucking make that happen. But
let's start a co-op. Come on. Let's do it.
Yes. Co-op. Tabletop co-op. But to follow that, so Vi, what can a designer, author, writer, what when they approach you, what can they do? What can they tell you? What do you ask for that sets you up for success for the process? Like, is there like a, this is going to be specific to you, this may not be specific to every editor out there, but like, what does turnaround look like in some cases? You know, are you able to break that down for us?
I think that part of it is, and part of this is on me as kind of the person that is viewing the product, or rather what you're handing me. But it's knowing what your project needs, because that is, you know, really drastically going to affect the turnaround. Because to kind of quantify it in a real way, instead of, you know, a kind of analytics way. I think it takes more like focus and energy and you know, thinking time for me to do those like really big edits. Like not only does it take longer to like read so I can get a good idea of the whole section that I'm intending to be looking at, but it's like, it's a lot like keeping an eye out for spelling errors and just word choice is a lot easier. I can just kind of like do it as I read, cause that's what comes naturally. But then, you know, getting really in the weeds and getting like, you know, we were talking about gardening before we started recording, like really getting in there and getting your hands dirty. And I think that, you know, getting an accurate assessment of how long it'll take or what your project needs is on both ends, kind of being able to communicate that. And it also, like, those communication things are really important for how you look at your own work, because there's a, I think that it's, there's one of my good friends who talks about the way that they view their own writing. And they, one of the things they said is that when I hand my text off to an editor, it ceases to be mine. They see their job in writing as being one part of a bigger project. And I think that looking at your own writing through that lens can be a little bit tough. And I think that it can be really helpful to being able to process what the editor is doing, because mm-hmm. their job in the process is to, you know, delete some of those words that you spent a long time writing, you know, looking through a thesaurus or a dictionary, or, just slaving over an empty Google Doc, you know, just like, ugh. And I think it can be a little rough to see just like a whole bunch of work, you know, and get kind of deleted. And it's like, ugh.
Yeah.
I think that coming in with the mindset of knowing not only what your project needs, but what it will look like to get that, being on the same page as the editor there, is so important. I think I've been really lucky. There's only been one job where it seemed like we were really on different pages. But most of the time it's been like, you know, I'm going to be changing words. I'm going to be deleting sentences, maybe. I'm going to be, you know, doing all this stuff. I'm going to be making it all look consistent. And I don't know, just being prepared for that, you know, mm-hmm. is one of the best things you can do.
Yeah, I really think there's certainly a difference between criticism and critique. The reason I think about that mostly is in social media space, but, you know, that's a whole different mm-hmm. topic in of itself. Well, but when you're connecting with a collaborator for your project on a professional/creative level,
yeah.
I think as an artist, you have to be open to the sense that the person that you're sharing this with is not you, and so they're not going to carry the same experience. They're not going to carry the same touch points or inspirations that are sort of invisibly working on your project. And so when someone goes, I am kind of that person with my partner. My partner is also an editor for a lot of different things, like to help me write some stuff. And sometimes I'm like, you know what? I know that we love each other and I know that you're good at this, but could you read the whole thing first before you do, please? Uh-huh. I don't think, you know, if you saw the whole thing, would you get it? You know, it's one of those things where I can feel a little sensitive about, like, you know, just a blatant matter of fact, I don't understand this. I'm like, well, it makes sense if you read chapter 3. Like, you know, it matters
a lot of sense if you're in my head.
Yeah, yeah. And the thing is, like,
I relate to that a lot.
Yeah. That's all just to say, like, you know, the person who wants to help you is not giving you criticism. They're not forcing their projections or experience on top of you. But what's important to recognize that you're making a piece of content, a product, you're doing a service that you are giving to someone else to try to understand. And that needs to be as sort of universal. That communication has to be sort of as universal as possible, and maybe the way that you write or maybe the way you initiate the idea, you know, I'm sure writers have surprised you in what they've given you, but sometimes it's not universal. It's for you and for you alone. And if you can't come to terms with that, then maybe you just leave it as an ashcan project and call it a day. You know, just put it out there as it is and let's see what happens.
Yeah, I think that's part of knowing, like part of what we're talking about, the expansive writer's job, where it's like, hey, you know, it's knowing who your audience is. So if you're like, hey, you know, this might be kind of an obscure reference, but I mean, like, it's worth it to keep it in because of what it adds for me and the people who get it. But I think that, like, I had a good one. Oh, I think that part of the editor's job is being an audience stand-in. I think that's a good way to say that concisely, is that, you know,
absolutely,
it's my job very often to, I love my first read through of a book, even one that I'm editing, you know, that's still reading, where I'm able to say, like, I'm able to see it from start to finish and say, hey, this keyword hasn't been introduced yet, or like, oh, this doesn't make sense. And, you know, even if the author does, you know, have that inclination, which I share, which is like, oh, it makes sense, like, in the complete whole, I have to be like, okay, yeah, I empathize with that, but we need to make it make sense in context, in the little section here, like on the micro level. And, you know, because that's what is going to be easiest for the audience to consume it.
Yeah. Yeah, communication language is, you know, we work in words. We don't work in, you know, some of the words are illustrations. You can send concepts or ideas in that way. But at the end of the day, to get the software into the computer, you need the coding, the language. The dot image that you have on there isn't the whole kit and caboodle. Though, I wonder if you could make a game that was just imagery. Anyways,
I bet you could. I would like to see that. Let me know. I won't be able to edit it, but
just starts cutting away like arms and legs of people. I didn't think they needed it. Scrapbooking at its finest. Is there for the would-be editor out there, Vi? Maybe the beginner one, maybe the veteran one who needs some new juice, maybe for the beginning one, what's the best way that they can sort of, what's a good workflow to think about? What's, you know, how can they save themselves some time when they're first getting to the running grounds of this? You know, when I learn about goddamn Affinity Publisher, and they're like, you know, it would make things a lot faster is if you just learned the duplicate key instead of right clicking and duplicating over and over again.
Right. I think don't have intern brain. You know, it might be, I think one of the things that I did early on was, I think I made myself look more impressive by doing things that were not my, which I don't think is actually a very helpful thing to do. You know, if you're, I think that it's important to, you know, because we're talking about that being on the same page thing, you know, with the between the writer and the editor, I think that it's important to keep in mind, you're talking about saving time, like it takes, and I was talking about, you know, how much energy it takes to do more complex jobs. Know what you're in there for and do that, and, you know, just like let that be, like let each project be what it is, you know, as much as you might want to revamp a mechanic or add a sentence here and there, you know, I just think it's more valuable to show that you can do what, you know, is expected instead of doing something unexpected and, you know, gambling with
it. It sounds like there's a lot of, like, me and my partner talk about this a lot when it comes to creative work, about like drawing specific boundaries about what it is you're doing. Because creative freelance can very easily get away from you. And if those things aren't communicated to the clients appropriately about what you're there to do, you can run into the risk of someone being like, oh, could I just have one more pass through? I don't like this edit. Would you kind of redo it? Like, just sort of like revisional stuff that can really blow the scope out of something. Or, you know, is it that, you know, are you an editor that's like, I will only take this if it's on copy lock. Like, I don't want to, like, have you come back with more stuff beyond what we agreed upon, right? Like, oh, you know, while you've been editing for the last couple weeks, I suddenly imagined that I wanted a whole bestiary for this. Would you be willing to add that on? Sure, for extra dollars and time. You know
Absolutely.
What I mean?
Yeah.
Not as a part of our original agreement. And so I think, yeah.
I'm just saying that something also to be prepared for the beginning editor is one of the things you'll have to juggle is being aware of how many words you're editing. So that's why I like Google Docs. It just has a built-in word count function and a copy history for the whole document. So what I like to do is I just go into the Google Docs history and I rename the fresh document with the number of words that it is. And I am very much in charge of my own word counting, billing, and accounting, very much. Mm. There was a rather big job that I did that was kind of the typical kind of trad 3-book deal where it was the player, the GM, and the monster guide. And it took several months, and at the end of it, I had to go back through and make sure that I'd been paid for every word for every book and divided it between me and my co-editor correctly. And it was a lot. It was a little extra work, but that's one of the, as a freelance editor, you need to be aware that that's kind of one of the things you'll have to juggle.
Well, that's great. That's really good. Well, I think that's going to let us transition a little bit into, spicing it up. Trends, what... Ooh. Vi, because you're not a game author, I always like the trends section, especially more for the support staff of the industry. What are you seeing that you're enjoying in terms of maybe other editors you're watching? Or, is there something you're seeing from games that you're receiving lately, or games that you're hearing in social circles about, that are increasing the difficulty of your job, or is there a misconception about something? What's something that's just keeps popping up that you keep thinking about, talking about, that you want to kind of let other people know about? Or what is a trend within yourself that you would like to speak out into the ether and let someone run away with?
I've got two things at once for you, which Great. Is that I think I actually talked about this elsewhere as well, but about how, it's important for me to keep in mind that there is no way on earth that I could edit every RPG, right? There is so much room here to encourage other editors to take a shot and do their thing. And the other side of that coin is that one of the things that I selfishly want more of, and we talked about this in the beginning, this is exclusively for me, is I want really insightful criticism to cross my dashboard, because I was talking about the huge negative space in kind of tabletop RPG discussion. There's a couple different perspectives we can have on this. I was talking elsewhere about how I really liked the brain modification zine from the Brain Trust about how the production of A Guide to Casting Phantoms in the Revolution. And how that was cool to see the creator's perspective on it. But I honestly really want to see more, YouTube content, podcast content. I know that blogs have been a huge staple of the tabletop scene. I'm here for, I think I want to bring other people into the fold of, hey, there's a lot to talk about here. There's a lot to dissect. There's a lot that goes into all of these things that we make. And I not only want to see it played, but I want to see it, discussed like the art that it is. That's what I want to speak into the ether, let me tell you. Because I was talking about my YouTube channel being for me. I want more video content. Feed me.
Give it to me. Digitize me, Captain.
Yeah, and that's part of the book club thing. That's always the twist ending, is that, hey, you're that's part of the book club thing, is that it's not only about reading a book that you want to read, because, consuming media like that's important and cool, that it doesn't just languish on our shelves. But also, at the end of it, I'm like, hey, if there is a Twitter thread that you would write, or a blog post that you would write, or a voiceover with your phone that you would put a JPEG on and upload to YouTube talking about the book you read. I think that I want to see is more discussion from more people reading more books.
That was the first thing. You said you had a second thing? Or were those both the same thing?
The first one was creators talking about their own work. You know, I think it's cool to see, like, design process. I think it's cool. Whether it's in the book or elsewhere, supplemental. I think there was another one from recent memory was Chris Bissett talking about their game, A Dragon Game. Like, they released this whole, like, separate PDF alongside it that was like, hey, this is me talking about the fonts and the layout and how I did everything and why I chose the things I did. And it was so cool. Like, please look that up if you haven't. It was like seeing the design process, as much as I am of the school of thought that is of, you know, I think I value more an audience's perspective than a author like consistently repetitively narrativizing their own work, because I feel like there's only so much depth there, and I think it can be more about controlling the perception of your own game than anything else. And I'm not too keen on that. I'm like, you know, let's make new things if you want to say something new. But yeah, like hearing from creators and hearing from audience members.
Yeah, I definitely think there is, you know, you search the words D&D 5e on YouTube, you're going to get...
I'm pulling at my
10
face
videos
right now,
about
audience.
Spell casting. Yeah. I know that no dunking energy here, but I know the Alexandrian came to YouTube recently who did a blog beforehand for a very long time and still doing the blog, but you know, 10 videos are dedicated to what's your top first level spell? What's your top second level spell? And I'm like, damn it, dude. Come on.
Spells for a Pact Oathbreaker Paladin level 6 multiclass with Bard. Pick these or else you'll suck at combat.
You'll go Nova.
No, I think there really is, you know, what you do, what Tony does for +1 XP, and what Taylor LaBrèche does for Game Closet, I think are very powerful showcases that are not actual plays. I get into this conversation a lot with people in my Discord, but, you know, we're on the end of the spectrum. It's like, actual plays are not like the best way to showcase a game, because it's a very unique experience in that.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
You're not exactly executing the game. You're putting a sort of... It's an engine, right? But you're a totally different car. And so that's going to sort of coat the experience of the engine. You have all these wheels and thing of... How's a car work, Vi? Oh, do you know?
No, I am not here for how cars work.
Yeah, cool. Imagine that I explained to you for another 20 minutes about
that's
how
really
a car
insightful,
games
Jeremy.
Are similar.
That's really... I see that. I see the metaphor here. Yeah. I am off the train of RPGs being food. Now they're cars.
They are food! Holy shit, hold on. I do know food. They're totally food. Anyways, I do think there is, especially for the indie scene, and I mean like the sub-indie scene. Sub is such a weird prefix to add. Dom, sub, switch, but
I'm part of the Switch indie scene, really.
Oh God, I'm so glad you're here.
This is great. I hope you know we're having tons of fun here.
Oh, it's so much fun. But as far as I see it, this is my personal perspective. There are like three layers of marketing sphere when it comes to games. You have like the super mainstream, which is like Pathfinder, Numenera sits there, D&D, obviously. Then there's like this next layer that stuff like PBTA, Blades in the Dark, Iron Sworn is also getting up there as well. Mothership is kind of reaching that space as well. Mm-hmm. And then there's everything that's sort of like below that, which is a little bit more obscure. You kind of have to know somebody to know that that game's out there. You know, like Adira Slattery's Chair, Aditya's Space Goblins, the Lumen and Lux games that Spencer Campbell are working on. But you kind of have to be in that circle to know about it. And so that last layer is so unexplored in terms of like reviewership, right? Like the audience reviewer. And it's, you know, I think there's something really special about this sort of a pat on the back for both of us and anyone else who sort of does this, is that it's free advertisement and it's sort of like a charitable thing to do for, you know, I'm not trying to paint this as a picture of like, we are altruistic individuals. Like, we are making content for ourselves as reviewers too. I don't want to like give us a weird space of like, we're abusing the free review, but you know, It's totally like you said, like when you talked about why you created the YouTube channel in the first place, is that that space is kind of like voided right now in terms of who's looking at this Discord has ghosts in it, or looking at Nova, or looking at what's been like another really hot one, like Kitchen Nightmares is getting out there. Gun and Slinger has been like really on the upper echelon of people talking about it. And so, yeah, I would love to see more creators. I think about doing it more and more. Like, that's part of the reason I have this show, is so that I can get the designer on here to talk about their game.
I was going to shout you out with Game Flight, because you took a look at three of Riverhouse Games' games back in June.
Yes.
And it's like, hey, you know, there's like, we're talking about them. I think I think there's two interesting things here, which are, and I might forget one of them by the end, so
perfect.
That's too bad, but
that's how this show works.
I think that I've been playing a lot of Sunless Skies, and when we take two seconds at the very end to talk about this secret project I have, I've been playing a lot of Sunless Skies, and one of the attributes you can have is you can have like a couple points in like academe or villainy or establishment, and the fourth one is bohemia. And I think we are bohemia. We are bohemia here, okay? We are making art. We're making the weird art, and it's so good. I think that part of the fact of us being kind of like talking in this kind of hard to find, like we're beneath the ice in this way, right? Mm-hmm. It's like we have, I think that the stories that we tell, the things that we make, are more specific, and I am far more interested in exploring what a little detail means in one of our little games than something in a game that is so different in its goals. Like, we can talk, I could say, "Oh, D&D 5e is so shallow," right? But what I mean by that is like, hey, you know what? They are trying to make a product that appeals to such a wide, they're casting the widest net possible. Mm-hmm, and so you know, the thinking heads that say like, oh, will D&D 6th edition be just like all role play because that's what's so popular right now? No, of course not, because then they'd be getting rid of the people that like crunch. That would be that would lose that audience. So no, of course it won't be. Sorry, that's my hot take here, but like, I'm more interested in small nets. Give me small nets. I think there's a richer landscape to explore there.
Were those both things?
Don't look at me like that.
Oh, shit. Well, that, you know, the one thing that you intended to get out there. Yeah, I think, what did I hear it the other day? D&D is not a game anymore, it's a brand. And so,
oh, I have a whole YouTube video about that I'm writing with author Fiona Geist.
Yes.
But I think you're right, yeah.
Yeah, it's totally gone beyond its product. It is now like an entity in of itself, with D&D Beyond, Critical Role, Dimension 20, Adventure Zone. You know, it's just, it has so much public energy behind it. And so it kind of, you know, sniffs its own butt sometimes in terms of like, you know what? I am great. You know what? I am the world's only role play game.
Yeah.
Isn't that what they say?
That's I think it's one word, you know, but it's close enough.
Yeah, close enough.
It has the same spirit.
You know, I'm trying to dunk on D&D less and less because that's not what this show is about. But, you know, it is, when we talk about what we do, not just us as support staff, but also as designers out there, the big elephant in the room is that it's two things. On the con side, it takes up a lot of our bandwidth. It takes up a lot of, like, the marketing bandwidth. And that's sort of tough to come to terms with. But on the pro side, because it has such a magnetism and because it has so much of a self-propelled energy, that it gets people to start doing the hobby. And, you know, it's the same thing when it comes to, like, entrepreneurism. You need just those 100 true fans who will come to you and spend like $100 a month and you've made it. Like, you're cool on whatever agency or firm or creative endeavor you're doing, right? But in order to get those 100 true fans, you have to have a conversation with a ton of people. Like, you're not going to get a one-to-one conversion on everybody. You need that 10,000 to get that 100, baby. So that's what D&D does for us in a lot of ways. And I think there is a side where we have to think about, instead of dunking and being so angry at D&D for existing in the capacity that it does, I think what we really need to start moving towards, and myself included, is how do we abuse that, right? Like, how do we make that work for us? Oh, you like D&D? Then there's a good chance that you'll like, you know, if you like playing a paladin or do like that, if you like dungeons, right? Play some OSR content. I have this really cool indie OSR game. This is exactly what I wanted, right? It's goddamn, you know, like Torchbearer or Mouse Guard or something like that, right?
Yeah.
You play a druid all the time, right? Let's do something that's a little bit like Animal Explorer, Nature Explorer, right? Uh-huh. Look at Gian Shim's games when it comes to, like, all those keepsake adventures and the recently successful Shape of Shadows, right? Like, all those journaling experiences.
Or if you hate, the scheduling aspect, I think there is the single player game section there. That's one of the things I had this in mind when I was thinking about how I would answer the, you know, what am I seeing in the tabletop scene question, which is like, single player games are booming. I see comments on everything, at least one person asking like, can I play the single player? And it's like, hell yeah.
Yeah.
Do it.
Yeah. How do we do the single play? You know, I think Just on D&D a little bit more. You know, I've also seen the same thing where people are trying to figure out, like, how do I have... scheduling is an adult nightmare when it comes to people who have day jobs and are not strictly focused on being, like, tabletop sort of resonant creatives, right? And how do I play with one player? How do I play by myself? You know, how do I play with just two people?
That's why.
Go ahead.
What's the Party of One podcast with Jeff Stormer?
Yes.
That's like anyone who asks, like, hey, what do I do if it's just me and one other player? The first thing is like, you know, Jeff built this podcast and now it's like the one thing where it's like, oh, go listen to Party of One. And it's like, it's possible. We can do it. Here's a whole bunch of games. And so, I think it's like, hey, we have the clay of creation here. Like, let's build what we want to see in our community. And like that, part of that is, I think there's more eyes on tabletop gaming here. Absolutely. Because of 5e. And I don't know how fruitful it is to try to chase like that wide of a target audience. Cause we can see that and we're like, oh, can I match 5e? And it's like, no, but we can take advantage of the people that have spent a few years in D&D and are like, you know, there's got to be more here. And then they click, 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 you know, and like, oh my goodness, there's like a whole cave system here.
It's like looking at a fucking Where's Waldo.
Yep.
Just, there has to be more here. One of these pictures doesn't match.
Oh, man.
No, that's absolutely true. And the other thing to consider too, and this also goes along with like Kickstarter controversy and stuff like that, like how do you beat Kickstarter? It's a marketing conglomerate, and you know, what can we do to match that? Here's the thing. Kickstarter, D&D, they've got years on you, right? How do you become the next Critical Role? How do you become the next Dimension 20? You can't. One, they've already blazed that path.
Yeah.
Two, they have time on you, right? It's like when to say something, it says like, how do I be Vi? How can I be Vi? Vi has a number, has all bit one, been born Vi, and two, has grown up. You're never, and Vi's going to continue to be Vi moving forward, whatever form or shape that takes, right? And so you're never going to catch up to that. As so long as Vi exists. Once Vi has deceased, as all human beings do, you know, then you have a shot, I guess.
Maybe. Then you have to be the person that's like right behind, and then, you know.
Yeah.
Nah, I think I'm excited for people to surpass me. I think that I am all about boosting other small YouTube channels. I think that there's one channel called Dice Stew that does awesome stuff. There's one channel, I just saw it the other day. Pause on time.
Resources. No, you're good. Dice Stew. I also take note of resources and stuff to put in links.
And then there's C.A. Berlitz, who has been doing... I don't know how in the world I didn't know this, but they've been doing, like, I don't know if it's weekly, but just, like, really consistent, like, short overview videos of... Tabletop News. They have a YouTube channel just under their name, C.A. Berlitz, Berlitz. And it's like, this is awesome, talking about all of the things that I'm seeing on my dashboard. And yeah, I am so excited. Like, no one's ever going to be me, but I'm so excited for people to surpass me. I want people to talk about stuff better than I do, like John Battle. I love their stuff.
Aw. John Battle.
Yeah, and so, like, I'll be the first person to share your YouTube channel, as long as you're not beep, 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 you know, any of those people.
Yeah.
Giving them no airtime.
I saw a tweet about someone who makes kimonos, and they put up a sort of direct message they got for the lols, but also for a little bit of, like, education purposes as well. I think, you know, they said it was for the lols, but... a model had reached out to her and be like, hey, I love your kimonos. I would love to do like a shoot for you. I'm about to be in Tokyo like in a couple of weeks. Do you want to like get together, collaborate and hang out? And she was like, yeah, absolutely. Here's my rate for kimonos. Here's my rate for kimonos slash like teaching you how to wear one slash be in here, blah, 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 blah. And then like the clap back was, wait, but I'm a model. You should hire me to... sport your stuff. My however many Instagram followers. Yeah, much like neck gyrating energy was coming from this. And like, what? Why would you start a relationship with like, no. I'm trying to passively aggressively ask you to hire me. It's like, wait.
You want to collaborate with... No. I mean, like... and even just changing the tone of voice, it's like, or adding do, it's like, do you want to collaborate?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Huh? Do you want to pay me money? That's a whole nother podcast episode in of itself. I often think about starting a how-to podcast show, but there are already a ton of those out there, and Buzzsprout kind of has the market. But anyways... You've been doing this for a while, and like everyone else, you started, right? Everyone starts in a different space, but you started nonetheless. You had the opportunity of a friend to have a camera for you, but, you know, as we're talking right now, I have bought a software that allows me to use my iPhone as a webcam. So, reason why I preface all that, being sort of like, first of all, what would you coin yourself as a YouTuber? Because when I, you know... talking about what the audience perception is, I see you as like a reviewer most of the time is kind of what I see, but would you add something else into that mix?
I think I do aim for kind of like media analysis. Like I try to do like some video essay stuff. I try to do that sort of thing. I think one of the biggest indicators of that is the one that you said was the first video of mine that you saw, mm-hmm. which was the Invisible Sun video, which is part of my spell check series. So mm-hmm. I think that, you know, I didn't really talk much about the system. I used, you know, having a conversation about how it does spellcasting to talk about bits of it. And part mm-hmm. of it was criticism. Part of it was comparison. You know, a lot of in every episode of my spell check stuff, I try to tie it back in to the previous episodes. I say, how does this compare to where we started with 5e and Wonder of Wickedness and White Hack and Ark and Invisible Sun? And see like the commonalities and see, and then also, you know, as a way of seeing what it brings to the table that's new. And I think that, you know, that's part of my goal of bringing an environment of conversation to the table where it's like, hey, we can compare and contrast these, not to see what is better and what is worse, but to see their goals and to like, mm-hmm. and I think that's really cool. I think that I could be doing that with more than just magic systems. I think that's part of what just calls to me. It's like, hey, you know, mm-hmm. it's, I'm talking about the magic system. And, so yeah, I'd say reviewer, I'd say video essayist. I sometimes do some advertising, some shout outs, or at mm-hmm. least I've done one or two of those, but
yeah. Hey, make that money. I'm here for it. Yeah, I mean, as you mentioned earlier in the episode, you know, I also am a big fan of, I watch a lot of game video, like video game essays, like mm-hmm. breaking down mechanics. Like GM Toolkit is a huge one for me. Adam Millard. There's another one that starts with an R, but I can't remember off the top of my head. And then I watch a lot of like film one / story structure stuff. So like Studio Binder, Filmento, Nerdwriter One, as far as like video essays go. And I've also seen every film of painting. And I think what you do differently for me is that some of those feel or have an energy that isn't conversational. It's more just like presentary, where I think that you have a more like engaged, like almost like we're sitting in the same room sort of thing. Whereas like the other ones feel like I'm sitting in a stadium, if that makes sense. Like they're I'm here with a bunch of other people and we're just like mm-hmm. absorbing it. And there's no like, then we get to take that home at the end of the day and decide what it is for us. But it's almost like where I can feel the pauses in which I have asked you a question and now you are rebuttaling in your video. So I think the what I like about yours is just the different energy you bring, as we sort of talked about earlier off mic, about how it's just a very like casual professional experience. And you mentioned how you want to sort of maintain being a one man, if not at maximum a two man sort of show, also two person. Hello, my poisoned mind.
It's there always.
It's hard. It's not hard. Well, it's hard and it's not hard. Anyways, two person show. Anyways, I'll put my foot in my mouth, but that's only because I like it. And
I had to really, really hesitate. I don't know if we're established our relationship here enough, but I was about to crack a joke. It's like, put your foot in my mouth, but I didn't think that was appropriate.
Yeah, go ahead. You know, I've never tried it. Let's see what happens. If I don't like it, we'll stop. What I mean?
That's the conversation. I'm going to sound really pretentious here, but I think that part of what brings that energy to the YouTube channel is that tabletop is, it's not discreet. Like, I can't talk about a tabletop adventure like I talk about a film. I can't talk about three-act structure or exactly what will happen at your table. I think that talking about it in that open way about probabilities, or rather, like, you know, what is probable to happen is as far as I can really ethically go. And I think that is what I love so much about it. And that's what I'm searching for. I'm searching for that spot, the balance of like, how do we talk about non-discrete media? We can talk about it discreetly. I can say this illustration is here. I can say these words are in this order. But I think that it's more interesting to explore it in a way that is unique to the medium.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah, so I think that there is totally a... I feel like film and video games have such a, it's almost like the monotheism, or in terms of like the hero's journey and stuff, like, or Those two things are not connected at all, Jeremy. I don't remember what I was watching that caused it. Yeah, not connected at all. It's like the hero's journey stuff, where like in Western storytelling, we're sort of in a state as far as like film or story creation is concerned at a mass level that kind of self-perpetuates itself. Like, we started analyzing things using the same methods, and now we're – then that sort of has this very weird effect of now trying to create things using those analytical methods. Mm-hmm. So when we talk – so to bring that to tabletop games doesn't really work, because I think that this is my personal perception, but I feel tabletops live in the same space as like visual art lives in that it's something that's really hard to both qualify and quantify at the same time. Mm-hmm. That even the two OSR games next to each other are going to be vastly different in presentation of style, their concepts around the OSR sort of brain. Yeah. And then even then you have to ask the question, like, what is OSR? It's not really something we can answer the same way, like, what is a 3-act structure? Or, you know, what is a 4-act structure? Whatever. How do you make a serialized episode TV show, right? Like, all mm-hmm. those sort of bigger medias are self-perpetuating currently. And I'm only speaking to, like, the West. I can't speak for, like, Eastern-style storytelling, which is, I know, vastly different compared to us. But for tabletop games, I think you really hit the nail on the head. And I think we've all talked about this one way or another, just in the biome in of itself. But it's just so nebulous. It's so amorphous. It's so je ne sais quoi. Mm-hmm. You know?
Yeah, yeah. And I think that that's what we should be focusing on when we're talking about it. Is, you know, I hear a lot about how, hey, tabletop RPGs are new. They're pretty new. Mm-hmm. And, like, mm-hmm. conversations about them are, like I am, like, the other, one of the other many, many reasons that I started my YouTube channel was because I was, like, not only because, like, oh, there's blank space here, but also because, like, I get to fill that. I get to help mm-hmm. drive conversation. I get, mm-hmm. and the way that some, like, the people who choose to watch it might start thinking about the things that I talk about, or using that to think about the things I don't talk about through those lenses. And oh, that's so cool. Oh, mm-hmm. I want, mm-hmm. and that's, I lift up voices because I want to look at other, I want to hear other perspectives. I want to find new ways of looking at things. Join me is what I'm saying.
Join us. Yeah. It's part of the reason I started the podcast too. When I first got into the tabletop design space, I was like, oh, I want to be a game designer. So let me see if I can find some resources. Mm-hmm. Lots of YouTube stuff is like D&D homebrew dedicated. Yeah, yeah. Very, very rarely can I find like an indie game stuff. And then there was like some very small Blades in the Dark things, like the Vigilante playbook or crew sheet and everything like that. But I couldn't really find something even in podcast form that wasn't like board game related or board game tech or people talking about their own games and how those mechanisms apply them. And, you know, as we're having this current conversation, maybe back then I was a little bit naive to think that when we talk about tabletop design and me relating it to an art form, it's really hard to capture exactly what someone is doing. I know there's a lot of like game theory, play theory conversations out there as well. But again, it's like, what's the difference between like, yeah, this, the, if you painted the same picture with oil or painted it with watercolor, it's going to be different. But then at the same time, it's the same picture, but at the same time, it's not the same. Right. So, but part of the reason I made this channel is to basically talk with artists, essentially, I guess is what I'm saying, is like, cool. So if like you could talk about your design so that people can get an understanding of what you were trying to do, then does that help them come to decisions about their own? Because, you know, you could connect to Rembrandt, you could connect to Van Gogh, you could connect to, what is another name on this like art mug that I have? Rococo, right? Like it's those things speak to me. I want to emulate and iterate on those things. So then we go into like, oh, Adam Vass really inspires me. I want to mm-hmm. Imitate and iterate, right? Vi makes a YouTube channel, but doesn't talk about like this one thing, right? Yeah. So now how do I imitate and iterate that?
Yeah.
And so for me, it's like, I'm not hearing about the things I want to hear about when I want to learn about game design. So how do I imitate and iterate upon that, right? And so I think the reason I brought this up in this episode and that you've already said is like, come join us because one, again, it's about the different perspectives. And two, honestly, we may not be thinking about something you want to hear, and we just may not have the network. We may not have the latitude to execute on those particular ideas.
You know what?
If someone's not doing it, do it yourself.
It's what you were saying earlier, where like, you're never going to be Vi because Vi is Vi. And you know what? Who are you? I want to know who you are.
Yeah.
Because no one else is going to be you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And
I'm excited,
I think there's
that
also,
you're here, Jeremy. It's true.
And also, like, if you think that you have a good idea, if you think that you have a good perspective on what's going on, speak up.
Yeah.
Make something for yourself. I think it's unfortunate this is like at the tail end of the episode, but there is something to say about like that relates to creating new spaces for a more diverse culture in the tabletop scene. And my personal feeling is that we can't wait for people to open up chairs at their tables for us. So I think that if you want a sooner example of that, or if you want to be heard sooner, just make your own thing. No one can stop you.
It's true. No one can stop you, actually.
Yeah, literally no one can stop you.
There was something really inspiring I saw. There's this honestly really inspiring thing that I saw on Twitter the other day. I believe it was Pamu at the Dovetailer on Twitter, who said that... Yeah, like something along the lines of like RPG Southeast Asia did not wait for permission from America or from, you know, anyone to start making things. You know, it was, you know, because I don't think seeking that permission from any other group, as you're talking about bringing more diverse voices into the tabletop scene, I think that it's not something that. I don't think seeking permission is the first thing you should do. I think that creation is the first goal. And then because I saw there was the specific wording of something that recently that was like we need to make space, and it's like for more diverse voices. And I agree with that. Like, hey, we let's bring into conversation the conversations that we're having, the things that other people are already doing, and help cultivate that. But I think that it's, I don't know what word is right here, but I think that it's, I think that seeking approval or permission to do stuff like that is like, you know, that seems like a secondary goal. I don't know if I'm the right person to be saying that, but.
Yeah. No, I mean, I'll be one of the right people to say it, I guess, in this particular context is like, here's my thing. I attribute it to the same way as like I think about the classic corporate job is that you come in junior level, you work your ass off to no avail because you can't be promoted unless someone leaves because they don't want to pay more money for positions they don't. Want to create, right? So they become a senior executive or whatever. And you're like, man, I would love to be on like the CEO board. Well, those people are probably making an absolute dick ton of money. So like they are not willing to give up their seat for a long time. Even if they're like, well, you know, keep working really hard and you'll advance the corporate ladder. Like you can't, advance to a seat that already has a butt in it, right? Yeah. And I think there are individuals who are trying very hard to create spaces, to open up spaces to other people. But I think that it's also a weird – this is me. This is my personal perspective on it. But, like, if I were to join – like, I love Tony. Tony's cool. I have no issues with Tony. But if, like, if I was to join the plus one XP team on, like, a high up position, it's still Tony's show. It's not my space, right?
Yeah.
I'm still a part of Tony's space. No matter how many ways Tony tries to, like, be forward about that and slice it up, be like, hey, I really want Jeremy to be, like, at the forefront of this thing. It's just, it's not going to happen. The brand's already attached to him. It's going to continuously exist in that manner. So, like, I have to make draw your dice. I have to make, like, engaged media or whatever the fuck I want to call it. Like, I can't rely solely on the good faith of others to make my way in this new world or to craft new paths for people, because it will always be attached to the original entity. And if that original entity is a white ally, cool, great. Like, kudos, white straight ally. Like, I love that you're helping, but it will never feel like mine, right? Where, you know, it's the same for, like, Black America, where, like, America doesn't really feel like ours right now because, you know, additional conversations about redlining and blah, 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 and like, being excommunicated. You know, that's a whole, that's a whole other thing. But my point is that, like we said, literally no one can stop you, and there will be people that support you and want to see you grow. And that's, like, the version of allyship that I think is more useful for us, is that, like, this person is not attached to my channel, but here they are. Like, I want to keep, like, shouting out this person, or, like, use that influence to have, like, and also bring people in. But all I'm saying is that, like, the shorter path is to just do our own thing. Like, we just have to start doing our own thing and not letting people, like, put us down or shove us out. And if they want to support us, use your voice to support us, not really, like, bring us into your brand or fold or corporation, because your butt's still in that seat. You know, you cultivated that brand, and you know, I don't think you should give it up to someone else if that's not the pet. Like, if you're not trying to sell your business, right? But, you know, it's not going to be mine. So I want to make my thing. I want to own it. I want to have the creative say in what I'm doing.
I love that.
Yeah.
And so, I love your thing. Let's keep it going.
Thank you. Thank you. Let's go. Let's get to, I think I'm almost at 52 episodes. It's only been half a year, so I don't know what to do. I don't know what to do for the second half. My goal was just do 52. Anyways, not about me. So, Vi, I think we talked about a lot of cool things. I think that's going to bring us to the top of the show. We're at the 90 minute mark for sure. Any last, you know, once again, tell them where you can find you, talk to you, hire you. What can they get from your stuff? What have you worked on that you're really proud of? All these links and things will be down below in the show notes, so you can get a touch to Vi on a parasocial level.
I am at Collabs Without Permission on YouTube. Go watch my stuff. It's free. It's YouTube videos. You know, maybe back my Patreon. I have, like, a 2-hour-long secret patron playlist. I should talk more about that.
Ooh.
$5 or more, secret playlist. There's a Twitter account at IMMA Waffle Bunny. I'm a Waffle Bunny. Come and hit like on my posts to help me waste time as I'm editing. No, don't do that. Yeah, DM me, talk to me, post stuff in my comment sections. Just, like, and you know what? If you could do me a favor, and I'm going to take this time that's all mine to give you, listener, a shout out. Make something. Make something. I'm excited. I'll watch it. I'll click like. I'll leave comments on your stuff for a change. How do you like that?
Affect the algorithm.
That's basically me. If you want to see something I've done, you should check out Ice Fleet by Kawan. I don't talk about it enough, but I helped edit a tabletop adventure that's paired with like a ambient metal like vinyl album. It's the coolest shit. Or just like, yeah, I don't know. You can hire me. I'll edit your stuff. I edited some cool stuff, but for a Brain Trust member recently. That was cool. I think they got me on the show.
Maybe it did. Maybe it didn't. Who knows? Who's bribing me?
That's just me. I'm just here being myself. And yeah.
Straight goofing.
Yeah. Cool. Oh, I am writing my first game. I'm writing a game. It's a system, unfortunately. No, but it's mostly adventures.
Yes.
It's super secret. It's a single player game. But you know what? The ideas in it are hopefully interesting enough to be adapted to just whatever you're doing. Because it's a bunch of modular stuff by nature of it being about sailing. That's what it is. It's a single player journaling game where you keep a captain's log. It's basically Sunless Sea or Sunless Skies. It's called. Should I drop the name? Should I drop the
name?
The alpha name?
If you put, it's called, yeah, give the project name. Yeah,
it's called, or it will be called, Starless Sailors.
Starless Sailors.
Because I'm a hack. That's why.
Also, because you know you'll never find your way without them.
No, yeah, that's what's cool about it. It's also a little spooky.
Spooky, Eldritchy, yep. Out in the oceans. I hate it. Terrible fear. With revealing myself, I think that's going to bring us to the end of the show. Thank you, everyone, for being here today. Thank you, Vi, for being on the show. I hope that you all had a great opportunity to sit along with us and listen, because I know I learned a lot here today as well. We will catch you next time. Say bye to the people. Bye.
Goodbye, people. Bye to the people. Bye.
Bye. Bye. Bye. Bye. Bye. Bye. Bye. Bye. Bye. Bye. Bye. Bye. Bye. Bye. Bye.
All right, that's a wrap. Thank you for taking the time to sit down and hang out with Vi and I. We really appreciate it. You can find links and resources down below in the show notes, such as getting in touch with Vi or other episodes with similar topics. If you want to be a part of the conversation, please consider joining the community Discord server. Also, make sure to subscribe to the Draw Your Dice Patreon, where you can get access to early releases of episodes from as soon as we interview. Thanks again for stopping by, and as always, I will catch you next time.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.